is right there.
Oh, are we okay? Are you okay with this language, or does it change?
I've changed it.
Okay, who has it changed?
Brendan.
Okay. Well, can you go talk to Brendan?
So do you want it incorporated in the master document before we start, or do we just want to do it separate?
Whatever you want to do, fine with me.
Is he gonna?
I'll need my language back. I just gave it to Brendan.
Is he gonna come in with a piece of paper with it on it?
Well, he was trying to get it incorporated in the latest draft.
I'm nice to see you this morning. Great, thank you. I'm glad you're here. Thank you very much.
It'll be a separate. Yeah. Ty, it'll be a separate piece of paper.
What will be a separate?
What? Okay. Is it all scripters?
Version X.
But I need my language in Brendan.
What version are we using?
He's going to come in with
separate
version.
So we're going to use the last one I handed out?
Correct. And then we will use that to make further consideration.
Okay.
And it is. All right, City Council will come back from recess. We are still in our Thursday 2 p.m. Session. It is still July 23rd, 2009. We are all in attendance, and we are going to be considering on the regular agenda today three related council calendar items, 1031, 1032, and 1033. We will be considering them as a group and taking testimony as a single group as well. So, Carla, could you read the titles for those three items?
1031, authorized financial terms and conditions between the City of Portland and Peregrine LLC for improvements necessary to accommodate Major League Soccer at PGE Park. 1032, adopt findings and authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding process for development of an MLS stadium pursuant to ORS 279C.330 and City Code Section 5.34.810 and 5.34820. Item 1033, authorized sole source acquisition and execution of a contract with Peregrine Sports LLC for pre-development agreement and operating agreement for a Major League Soccer stadium.
All right, just to try to organize our work here as much as possible, I think that we should get in front of us officially the basic amendment that's been passed out by Commissioner Leonard to 1031, and that serve as the basis of our discussion for further consideration. Does that make sense to folks?
It does. Unfortunately, we've had a couple iterations handed out, so I'm going to move the amendment that has been handed out that
So if you
so this is the amendment I'm handing out replaces all other prior amendments.
Okay.
I move that amendment as the
basis of
substitute
discussion.
Exhibits A, B, and C.
It's been moved that the
we have one other copy. I think
we have one other copy.
Okay. You didn't get this.
So. The proposed MLS transaction terms, the amended version just passed out by Commissioner Leonard, has been moved to serve as the basis of our discussion and further consideration. Do I hear a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
You're going to go through what the amendments are?
Yeah, we're going to walk through it detail by detail, but I want to make sure we all are on the same piece of paper. So, Carla, can you please call the roll on the motion?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. All right. So we all have the same document in front of us. And just for my edification, are there proposed amendments to 1032 or 1033?
Yes.
Are they, but not?
Well, I'm sorry. Maybe I have the numbers wrong. Which?
1032 is the regards the bidding process, and 1033 okay. is
1031 incorporates the sustainability language you wanted, Commissioner Saltzman.
Yeah, we'll get back to yours, I promise. Okay. 1031 is what we just did.
But it reflects the language that Commissioner Saltzman wanted in sustainability.
Just that's for your information. So I'm looking to staff. Are there further changes to 1032 or 10?
Why don't you come forward?
Are there further changes, any proposed amendments to 1032, which is a second reading, or 1033, which is a second reading? Mr. Rust. Mr. Kovach. All right.
They're going to explain what we have here, so you might want to make your remarks.
Okay. So, not hearing any. Today we are considering terms of agreement. This is the basic concepts, the basic shape of what will be turned into definitive documents. It does not deal with absolutely positively every possible detail that will have to be incorporated into the final definitive documents, but it does give the direction and it does lay out how the definitive documents will be finalized. A couple of comments that I'd like to make up front. First is my thanks to Commissioner Randy Leonard for being such a great partner in being at the table and negotiating this agreement. Third time's a charm, I'm hopeful. And Commissioner Saltzman for having Brendan Finn at the table, and to the other council offices for your input on this over these many weeks and months. I'm supporting this basically because the fees and taxes that are used for the public portion of this public-private deal are basically derived from spectators and visitors to the city. And that includes the old debt on PGE Park and the new debt that is taken out. It includes the ticket charges and parking revenue in the Rose Quarter. It includes hotel, motel, visitor tax that is already in place. This funding source does not compete with any other funding source for basic city services. Memorial Coliseum, there are some changes to that Ken Russ described at our last briefing regarding some of the contingency funds at Memorial Coliseum, but we'll be coming forward to council soon with the terms of agreement with the Blazers regarding the future planning process for Memorial Coliseum. And just as we had an expectation with Merritt Paulson that he would buy the $18.5 million in tax increment financing zero coupon bonds that will otherwise expire in the Rose Quarter, we expect the Blazers to do the same, and that those revenues would be available, among other things, to deal with the issues that we face at Memorial Coliseum. There's also potential upside here in terms of more business license fee revenue to the city moving forward. I also support this, as Commissioner Fish sort of was analyzing out loud last time, that the $11.9 million derived again from spectators at sports venues and a tax on visitors in hotel motel rooms, it leverages $44.1 million to the deal. If those numbers are exactly wrong, I know Ken Rust will make the necessary clarifications. I support this because the risk to the general fund is well protected. I support this because there is a 25-year requirement that the team stay at PG Park. And I support this because of the Good Neighbor Agreement, because of the contributions that Mayor Paulson will be making to improve other sports facilities, his commitment, as he has already shown, to be well involved in the community, because of the wages protections, and because of the expectations on sustainability. So those are some of my opening comments. Commissioner Leonard.
Well, I've learned a lot through this process, to say the least, and one of the things, I don't know that I've learned, but reinforced with me, is that there will be those who won't like this deal no matter what it does or what it says. They will find reasons not to like the deal. But if you're one of the folks, such as I believe I am and most Portlanders are, that, for an example, wanted the deal to protect taxpayers, if you wanted the deal to provide good construction jobs, if you wanted the deal to require a substantial personal investment, and a guarantee to the city by the owner, Merritt Paulson. If you wanted the workers at PGE Park to receive a living wage, which, by the way, is 16% higher than their counterparts at the Rose Quarter will receive, and if you wanted a deal that required Merritt to make other private investments to soccer fields around Portland, which he's committed to do with the concurrence of the Parks Commissioner, and last but not least, if you wanted a deal that would provide a great new major league sport for Portlanders, and particularly our passionate soccer fans, then this is the deal for you. This is a deal unlike any deal I'm aware of in any other city in the United States, but especially in Portland. It provides all of that for Portlanders and creates an exciting new major league sport that I think even those of us that may not be the most passionate sports fans will greatly enjoy and love. So I appreciate Commissioner Adams and actually each of my colleagues' input because everybody's had a hand in what this deal finally turned out to look like, everybody, whether they support the deal or not. And for that reason, I think as arduous as it was a good process, and it produced for us, I think, a stellar deal that all of us should be proud of. So at this point, we're going to ask staff to talk about the particulars of the deal. We'll have counsel ask questions about the deal, and then open up to testimony. Thank you, Mayor Adams.
Is it?
Your amendment's in the...
No, it's... We've drafted one now.
Okay.
Sure. Can you pass it?
This is an amendment in the nature of a substitute for Section 9, sustainability. And it basically strikes the existing language and replaces it with Paragon will be responsible per the city's green building policy for the MLS Stadium meeting LEED Silver certification for existing buildings operation and maintenance, and will obtain certification from the United States Green Building Council.
All right.
Substitute for the existing.
And just for your reason for this, the amendment?
Earlier versions did not contain reference to the city's policy about meeting LEED Silver standards. I found the existing language just a little too wordy. So I think this is just straight to the punch. So I offer this amendment.
Second.
I would like to actually ask somebody from Peregrine to come up before we get into the deal and talk about the specifics.
It's been moved and seconded. I would like to, if it's okay with you, Commissioner Saltzman, run through and answer questions on any other aspect of the document in front of us, and then consider your amendment. And as we go through, there might be others.
So,
Mr. Kovach.
Wow. I think it might be helpful if...
Who are you?
I'm Ty Kovach from Commissioner Randy Leonard's office. Ken Rust is here to go over sort of the broad detail of the term sheet, and I think that'll be helpful in discussing the changes that have occurred in the last week from the filed term sheet to today's, just because people watching don't have the full context. So I'll turn it over to Ken.
Thank you, Ty. Mayor Adams and members of the council, for the record, I'm Ken Rust, the Chief Administrative Officer and the Director of the Office of Management and Finance. I'm going to walk through briefly with you today the financial terms that are part of the term sheet and Resolution 1031 that's before you. As you know, the project cost is now $31 million, which is a reduction from prior cost estimates for the project, which reflects a downsizing of the project elements. In terms of how that will be funded, the funding plan is broken down as follows. There's an $8 million cash contribution from Peregrine that will be made. Peregrine will also provide a prepayment of scheduled annual payments and user fees that were projected to be received by the city through years 8 through 25 of the agreement. That represents an upfront payment of $11.1 million. The Spectator Facility Fund will be contributing a total of $11.2 million in the form of cash or bond proceeds from a borrowing that we will be executing. And then the city will assume or waive certain fees and charges totaling $700,000. In addition to the upfront capitalized payment that I mentioned, during years 1 through 7 of the operating agreement with Peregrine LLC, the city will receive user fees equivalent to 7% ticket tax on all ticketed events at PG Park, and an annual payment equivalent to $875,000 beginning in year 1, escalating at $25,000 a year thereafter. and that those payments will be guaranteed by a personal guarantee of the Paulson family that we'll be negotiating as part of the subsequent set of agreements that we'll be working on.
Could you just say that? Could you say that again, please, the last part about the $800,000 per year?
We have rent that is scheduled at an annual rate of $875,000. It's actually called an annual payment. Scheduled at $875,000 a year, increasing at $25,000 a year thereafter.
And that's just for rent?
That's an annual payment. Some people like to refer to it as rent, yes.
Okay, thank you.
In terms of cost overruns, we've negotiated protection from the city. The city has a maximum exposure of up to $1 million for cost overruns. If those cost overruns are incurred, the city will not pay for that until years 26, 7, or 8, of the agreement by extending the term of the operating agreement and allowing Peregrine LLC to recover those costs in the future and on based on a method that we've negotiated for calculating the equivalent value of the cost overrun in today's dollars. Any overruns beyond $1 million are purely the responsibility of Peregrine LLC. In terms of the fair wage policy, we've negotiated an agreement where Peregrine will contribute one half of the cost of the fair wage policy by making an upfront additional $1 million cash contribution as part of the financial arrangement. That's why their particular contribution increased from $7 million to $8 million in this term sheet that's in front of you. The city will then be responsible for continuing the fair wage policy and paying 100% of its cost from the Spectator Facilities Fund, but that's part of the agreement that we've negotiated. So in summary, what we have in front of you is a term sheet that will fully fund the $31 million project cost. It includes a total of $19.1 million of cash payments from Peregrine, Spectator Facilities Fund contributing $11.2 million of either borrowed funds and or cash from the fund. The Spectator Fund is projected to have more than enough resources to fully fund all existing obligations, along with the proposed renovations of PGE Park that we're discussing today. There is no use of general fund monies, and we believe the risks to the general fund are negligible, even though the general fund will back the bonds and backs all the bonds that have been issued for the Rose Quarter development and for the first phase of improvements to PG Park. We believe that the business projections that we have and the guarantees that we have in place pose very little or no risk to the general fund going forward. In conclusion, after working on this long and hard and on various iterations of this, OMF supports the financial plan and term sheet as proposed.
Discussion from council.
I have a couple of questions, if I could, Mayor.
Commissioner Fish.
Ken, when we talk about $31 million in project costs, that's the cost of the renovation. But there's other money that's being brought into this deal that I've been using on my little cheat sheet, and that's the $35 million that Mr. Paulson is spending of his own money to acquire the franchise, correct?
That's correct.
So, and I think it's just important to keep track of those dollars, because if you add up the money that you've just described that he's putting into the deal for the quote-unquote project cost and his $35 million, his share is now up to about $54 million. Is that correct?
Correct.
And the $875,000 that we're going to sort of colloquially call rent, but is this payment, how is that figure calculated?
It wasn't a negotiated figure.
Is it? My understanding is it is roughly what he is currently paying now for both soccer and baseball. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so under this deal, if baseball no longer has a home at PGE Park and goes somewhere else, the rent that has been negotiated, if you will, still is at the rate that he was paying before, which included a payment for baseball?
That is correct.
And I asked you a question the last time we came forward. And by the way, Ken, there's never enough credit we can give you in these things, because, you know, you are very diligent and you spend a lot of time in each of our offices explaining this stuff. And none of us up here are experts in high finance. So I want to thank you for the work that you do. In 2025, what is the worst case scenario that you can contemplate?
That I'll be dead. Yeah, I don't appreciate the applause.
Are you guaranteeing part of this?
Other than Commissioner Leonard's untimely demise, and I want to be the first to offer my condolences to Julie.
No, he's going to live forever.
Can you just in 2025, are there some, is there a worst case scenario that you can imagine?
Well, I think the worst case scenario that may that could happen is that at the end of that time period, the current agreement with the Trailblazers for use of the Rose Garden expires. Until that time, they are fairly bound to us through the exclusive site agreement, which would make it economically punitive for them to leave the city prior to the expiration of that agreement. They could choose after that period of time to renegotiate the terms of the business arrangement that we have. That could have a financial impact on the city, perhaps negative if we're looking at worst case. They could leave without any financial penalty to themselves. Clearly, if we lost a tenant like the Trailblazers with bonds still outstanding for this particular deal, that would create a financial hole that we'd have to work on trying to fill. Now, at that point, we also get the Rose Garden, which I believe will be a facility that will have some economic value. We could find another tenant for the use of that building. We could sell the building and defease the obligations that are outstanding. So, well, it looks like there's a potential risk out there, and certainly we will be concerned about that and would love to have the Trailblazers be a part of the community for in making significant financial contributions that they have in the past. You know, I think that there would be several different ways in which that issue, if it ever materialized, could be managed, and again, avoiding any serious impact on the general fund.
Okay, thank you. I may come back. Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz.
So continuing on the worst-case scenarios, I see, and thank you, by the way, everybody, for the work that's been done on the progress on this in protecting general taxpayers. What if MLS goes bust? In the previous, one of the previous agreements, there was an ongoing financial obligation from Peregrine LLC. But in this one, they're paying up front, but then we're left with PGE Park empty, right? With a soccer-specific stadium.
Correct. The good news is that if MLS folds and we receive no additional revenues from them, all the revenues that we're supposed to receive will either have been received or they'll be required to be paid to us through a guarantee payment from the Paulson family. So from that standpoint, we are completely protected. We lose out on potential upside. We also then have a facility that's been renovated to a configuration that works for soccer or for football and for events that can use that configuration. And certainly we would look to find other uses for that facility and try to find ways in which we can generate revenue. If we aren't successful, we also have fewer events in a facility that will be largely dormant, and that means lower cost. Because the Spectator Fund is really picking up a substantial share of the costs of the existing debt of PGE Park and a portion of this debt that will be issued for the renovation, I don't think that the Spectator Facilities Fund would be in any different financial position as a consequence of losing MLS, something that we certainly don't want to see happen. The deal protects us on the downsides. It gives us the opportunity to participate in the upside. And if we lost that tenant, we would certainly try to find someone else that would be interested in a relatively modern stadium configured for football or soccer. In fact, there's been some discussion about, you know, the PSU Vikings perhaps at some point going to Division I. They would have a fantastic facility that would certainly meet the requirements that would serve that need.
It would be way too small for Division I football. I mean, Autzen,
they can always dream.
Autzen's 60,000. So on the specifics of the financing, there's an 8% discount factored into the prepayments. But in the affordable housing project that we just did, there was a 6% discount. Are we giving a sweeter deal for soccer than affordable housing?
I don't believe so. The discount rate was, again, a negotiated element of the term sheet. When we looked at the financing, the alternative that we had was to have a guarantee from the Paulson family of those annual payments and the user fee years 8 through 25, and we would finance against that. When we've been running our numbers based on the difficulty of the credit markets, the taxable bonds that we'd be issuing, and the zero coupon bond structure that presents its own unique marketing challenges, our estimate is that the cost of issuing those bonds will be around 9%. So our cost of borrowing, because of the nature of the transaction, actually results in a discount rate that may be in excess of 8%. So we feel comfortable that the 8% number, while it seems high in comparison to other deals that are simpler, traditional, tax-exempt perhaps, underlying cost of capital, we don't think it's an unreasonable rate. In fact, given the ability to capitalize that payment up front and reduce our exposure to bond issuance costs and other things, we think it's actually a deal that favors the city.
So with the $11 million we'll be bonding, how much will we be paying in debt service, and how long will it take us to pay it off?
We're still working on the different structuring approaches. The maximum term would be, I believe, is 25 years out through 2035. If we do an all zero coupon structure, we're looking at a total principal interest cost of somewhere around $44 million. We're looking at different alternatives that might be able to reduce that cost, but that's the range of numbers that we're looking at, Commissioner.
Okay, and then in the it doesn't seem like the numbers have changed since 2 weeks ago. That it was about $11 million for on our side of the ledger, $19 million for Mayor Paulson. And yet the amendments that we just got say that now we're paying half the living wage.
Correct.
So where is that coming from?
It will be reflected in the pro forma numbers for the Spectator Facilities Fund.
So is the total cost of the stadium now $30 million because $1 million of Merritt Paulson's money is going to pay wages?
No, his $1 million is being contributed to the project. If he didn't, for example, I think the easiest way to think about that alternative, if he didn't agree to make the $1 million payment up front, we would have another funding hole of $1 million. We have a $31 million project. If he only contributed seven, then we'd have to either increase the borrowing from the Spectator Facilities Fund and have a total of $12.2 million outstanding versus what we have now, which is a smaller borrowing amount, gives us the ability to carry all of that cost in the Spectator Fund and use his cash contribution to help meet the total project funding need of $31 million.
So you're saying that his cash contribution has gone up since 2 weeks ago?
No, it was $8 million then.
Well, yeah, but 2 weeks ago he said, and Commissioner Leonard said, that we were going to have card check for unionization and no fair wage.
Correct.
So now we have fair wage split 50-50 in this agreement, and the city would pay half, and Merritt Paulson, apparently $1 million of his is now not going to construction but going to that.
No. The transaction in that sense is that the initial agreement 2 weeks ago that we talked about was that he was going to cover half of the fair wage cost by, instead of writing a check every year, giving us a cash contribution up front.
But that wasn't in the agreement 2 weeks ago.
Yes, it was.
Well, not when I asked you in council.
It had $8 million in it. That was part of the deal. And the fair wage cost was going to be no additional cost to the city. There was
Go ahead.
It was my understanding following that meeting that Commissioner Leonard had discussions with different individuals and determined that the understanding that Merritt had about what the city would be doing with regard to paying the fair wage cost was different than what was actually being presented. And that caused a problem for Merritt because he was contributing upfront one half of the cost towards construction, and it created a problem that we needed to resolve. Commissioner Leonard asked me and my team to work on how we would be able to resolve that, and what we ended up doing is finding a way that we could fit that in within the Spectator Fund, because at that time we were carrying in the reserve about $1.2 million for funds that would be available if the current agreement, which expires in 2010, exposed the city to having to pay debt service completely from PG Park without any other tenant or agreement with the Beavers and the Timbers to remain there. We needed at least that protection for a year to cover our financial exposure. Once we have this deal executed, that doesn't seem to be a necessary additional reserve to be maintained. That allows us to contribute that money into this deal. That allows us to reduce the borrowing cost and absorb the fair wage cost and keeping ourselves equal. And I think honoring what the meeting of the minds was between Merritt and the city, but that ended up not being what we presented 2 weeks ago. That's my recollection, how we worked out the details, and Commissioner Leonard may have more information to share with you.
Okay, let me get some more of my questions out on the table. In this revised agreement, there's an agreement to pay $50,000 a year for Peregrine to pay for sports fields. But in the previous version, there was $100,000 per year, 30% of which would go to sports field. But it seems like that's now $250,000 less than was previously bargained.
In the original discussion around this point, it included both the Portland Beavers and the MLS team, each giving a proportionate share of a contribution to local sports deals. Peregrine continues to intend to contribute $100,000 to metro area youth sports facilities and programs. However, the current Beavers home is not is up in the air, and so were they to locate in another locale, the Beavers' contribution would more likely be focused in that locale rather than in the city. So this is the MLS-only variation of the deal. A previous version spoke to $100,000 area-wide from the organization that would own both teams, and that still remains true. We just narrowed it to focus on the part that applies to Portland.
The version I got at noon today, dated July 23rd, says $100,000.
But you have to read it all.
I have read it all.
It says area-wide. It doesn't say within the city of Portland. That's what Ty just explained.
But the current version says $50,000.
In the city.
Where's the rest of the $50,000?
Well, as he just explained, it follows the Beavers. If the Beavers stay in the city, it'll stay in the city. If they move to some other location, it'll follow them there. His intent was, as we were tying both the Beavers and the Timbers together, he agreed to contribute $100,000. But as we have decoupled the Beavers from the Timbers, he has now segregated the amounts half to the Beavers and half to the Timbers.
So we decoupled them 2 weeks ago, but we just realized that this was an error. Is that right?
There's a lot of things that have been changing as we have discovered different aspects of this that need to be cleaned up.
Mr. Fritz, would you yield on that one point?
Absolutely.
So I just want to put this on the record as a clarification. At the beginning of this process, when I first had discussions with Mr. Paulson and his crew, I said that if we are going to make a significant public investment in a Major League Soccer facility, I would hope that we would also be making some investment in youth sports community-wide. In response to that, a proposal was worked into the agreement. And the original version was $100,000 for a period of 5 years, with the understanding that this was a Beavers baseball and MLS contribution. As my colleagues know, I actually opposed that original deal. I had not conditioned my support for or against this on that. I had simply stated that I thought we needed to be able to show the community some link to a broader agenda than just professional soccer. This particular language, which commits $50,000 a year, at least $50,000, to build athletic fields in Portland, is consistent with my understanding. And there has been some confusion on this, and I appreciate Commissioner Fritz for bringing it out. And this has been complicated. I've been confused on some points from time to time. But this is now consistent with my understanding. And as the council person who first raised this issue of equity, I am satisfied with this language in terms of the commitment that Mr. Paulson made.
Thank you for that clarification. Then going back to the proposed development agreement, Section 4.5, in the event that the cost of the stadium is less than $31 million, the stadium savings shall be used for future capital improvements, which really brings us back to the issue of the sole source contract and what are we buying for $31 million?
Well, there is a general schedule of the listed improvements as an exhibit, and if you need more details on that, you'll have to talk to someone that's more familiar with the work schedule and the work plan. I don't have a lot of information on.
So tell me again, why are we going for a no-bid sole source contract when so many of our contracts that are coming before us every week are coming in at a third to a half off?
Well, this is a public-private partnership, and as was described at the previous meeting, if you believe that there is another entity out there that would pony up, you know, just on the facility-related issues, the $19.1 million, then this is a judgment call, in addition to having $35 million and secured a franchise expansion opportunity with MLS. But there is only one MLS, and they have awarded it to this particular private sector partner who is contributing significant amount of resources. It is a judgment call. I do want to underscore that legally we're required to say sole source, but we also have significant requirements about oversight on our part and continue to come back to City Council on a variety of phases for our approval and our scrutiny and public hearings on implementation of this.
Thank you. So moving on to Section 8, the Good Neighbor Agreement. I'm going to be interested to hear testimony from folks to consider whether there need to be amendments to the Good Neighbor Agreement. then getting back to the issue of city-directed wages, I can't fathom why the city would pay top-up wages for the employees of PGE Park. I mean, I know we're already doing it, and Commissioner Leonard himself said it was a mistake back in March. So why are we, what's the purpose in doing that?
To be compliant with the city's fair wage policy, I believe.
And doesn't that require our contractors to pay fair wages?
We've negotiated an alternative, which is, has them paying one half of that. We're using that for construction. And our part of the agreement is that we continue to pick up the difference so that the employees there receive the required fair wage amount.
And is my math correct? Is it about $5 million over the course of the agreement?
Or I don't know what the total is. It starts out at about $120,000, and it escalates after that. So okay. I haven't run a total on that.
Then my final question on the exhibit and the proposed agreement. The city will use best efforts to work with Peregrine Lincoln High School and Multnomah Athletic Club to develop a parking facility. What is meant by that? I thought the whole purpose of wanting to keep it at PGE Park was that we have light rail and we don't need to do parking facilities.
Yeah, let me just get to the section.
And I'll again be interested to hear from citizens whether that's been part of the community conversation.
Can you draw me to the section really quick?
11,
can...
on page 7 of 8.
Yes. That's purely aspirational language about the collective agreement that if there are opportunities to enhance the parking opportunities at PGE Park, of which I understand there to be almost none at this moment in time, then the city will agree to, in good faith, look at options for doing that. I know the Multnomah Athletic Club is also looking for parking solutions for themselves, and it's just something that in the negotiation discussions, folks around the table agreed to look into, and this doesn't bind anybody to anything other than in good faith looking at potential options.
I'd be interested to hear testimony on that too. Thank you.
Commissioner Saltzman.
First question is, when do we actually see the personal guarantee, Paulson family personal guarantee, and do we approve that?
My understanding is that it would be negotiated as part of the development agreement that needs to be executed before we would sell the bonds. Mm-hmm. So that will be something done over the course of the next month and a half or so. And that would
so that development agreement will come to us for approval.
Yes.
And at that point, we'll be able to see the language of the personal family.
Correct.
Guarantee. Okay. And then I had one other question.
Sure.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
It's getting back to the living wage, and I guess this is more policy than anything else, but as of a few weeks ago, we were talking about card check and neutrality as opposed to continuing the living wage policy. And now it seems we're no longer talking about card check and neutrality. Now we're talking about keeping the living wage, which my preference too would be the living wage be borne by the operator. But I'm just curious what happened in the last 2 weeks to kind of totally turn that around.
I should probably speak to that. As you recall, at a number of different sessions here and my one-on-one meetings with both collective bargaining units, with the president of the AFL-CIO, in fact, going back to when I first came on council and had opportunities to vote on the living wage, you'll recall, to the surprise of many, I was very reluctant to vote for it. And the reason I was reluctant to vote for it is because of my history in the labor movement. It is very unusual for an employer to unilaterally agree to pay something almost paternalistically above what the market is for a particular position, as opposed to allowing employees to collectively bargain through a elected agent their wages, their hours, their working conditions. And it always has hit me wrong that employees may want to decide their own future. And as it turns out, my instinct on that was reflected in conversation with the AFL-CIO, with, you'll hear from HERE today, with SEIU and others, that they agree. However, they're like here. I mean, we all are politically very closely aligned. That doesn't mean we don't have sometimes vigorous disagreements amongst each other. In the labor community, and you may hear that today, there are vigorous disagreements about that. And frankly, it just began to get so convoluted that it was just it became it was becoming a larger issue than what it could be given the complexity of this agreement. And so I finally sat down with Merritt and then with Ken and others and felt that since Merritt had contributed $1 million to represent his half of the living wage, it would just be a lot easier for this deal if we just continued the policy.
So is there still a commitment that was made 2 weeks ago to have card check and neutrality?
No, there is not. Well, I mean, the employees have the right in the United States of America to organize. Okay. They have the right. They are certain, absolutely strident federal laws about employers interfering with the rights of employees to bargain. And card check is yet to be the law of the land, although I support it. I think it should be. So our point was if Merritt didn't pay the living wage, then he needed to do card check. If he didn't do card check, he needed to do the living wage. He agreed to do the living wage.
This doesn't state and federal law protects their right to organize if they so choose.
Absolutely.
One more question.
Commissioner Fish and then Commissioner Fritz.
Hi, I have a question for you, and I just want to understand the symmetry here. The agreement contemplates that if there's a cost overrun, the city's contribution is capped at $1 million. And that's heartening to know that our exposure is capped. So I guess it begs the question of, well, if somehow the construction costs come in well below estimates and this whole thing can be renovated for $5 million less, what's the benefit to us if there is a substantial savings and the whole cost of the project comes down?
The term sheet here speaks to what would occur in the event of an underrun. And part of the discussion that we had 2 weeks ago when we brought this forward was about the negotiation that brought the project down from a $38 million project that included a variety of things that would enhance the fan experience and theoretically draw more fans to a $31 million project. And so in the discussion around that point in the development agreement, it is explicit that in the event of cost underruns, or if that's a word, the decision to go forward with any further capital improvements will be at the mutual agreement of the city and Peregrine. So whatever items on the list of improvements that would be in the design of making the Major League Soccer facility what it needs to be to get the job done, the $31 million lights up a certain number of those things. If there were savings that would result, it would light up a certain number more, and the city and Peregrine have to agree on how any savings would be utilized in that event.
But is it fair to say that the agreement contemplates that if there are savings, they will be reinvested in the project rather than returned to any of the partners?
Yes.
Okay.
Commissioner Fritz.
So I finally got to some of the Exhibit C. I hadn't seen this before regarding some of the upgrades that we're buying. And there's a number 7 on, they're not numbered pages, but Legend 1 construction scope. Number 7, upgrade public men's bath restrooms, adding 2 urinals to each men's bathroom. So I know one of the selling points several months ago was that the gender mix of spectators is roughly 50-50 in soccer. I don't know what the gender mix is for the current baseball and other uses, but what are the plans for increasing the number of women's restrooms and unisex bathrooms for men taking their daughters like my dad used to take me?
It might be more helpful to bring the Peregrine folks up here to discuss the finer points of the stadium improvements.
Okay. So I'll wait till it's their turn. Thanks.
All right. Any other discussion with staff?
Well, we have Steve. Steve, do you
want to come? Do you have a quick answer?
Steve?
Steve Siegel, do you have a quick answer?
I couldn't hear the question.
Why don't you come up and see if you can be helpful. Commissioner Fritz, could you restate your question?
I'm noticing in the construction scope that we're increasing the number of bathroom facilities for men but not for women, except in the 5,000 new seats. I'm wondering what the plans are for increasing the parity for wait times for women and also for fathers with single fathers, transgender, unisex bathrooms.
Commissioner Fritz. Unfortunately, I'm not working on the physical design, and I can't give you a specific answer, but let me give you a general answer.
And your name is?
I'm sorry, Steve Siegel, and I'm a consultant for Peregrine. The general answer is that we're about to begin architecture, and there'll be schematic design, design development, and so on and so forth, all of which has to be approved by the city representatives working on the project. And so as we work through all these issues, we'll have a better answer for that question. I just don't know the answer right now.
So for my colleagues, when do we get to review? Do we get to review a revised scope?
It actually comes back to us with definitive agreements, which go into great detail on all the concepts, all the issues, and all the details provided in that Exhibit C.
Great,
That's correct. Sorry, I couldn't answer specifically.
I think that I think I can speak for everyone on council that part of the reason for the renovation remains part of my support for the renovation is to provide better facilities to match the customer profile that we'll be using, and that it should be incredibly egalitarian. And acknowledge that there are a lot of female sports fans now and a lot of fathers with daughters that go to sporting events. So the restroom facilities darn well better reflect that.
And as the point person on the City Council for public restrooms, I share Commissioner Fritz's concerns and would appreciate her bringing this point up because that is something I would want to see as well.
Understood. I'll pass that on.
Thank you.
Any other discussion from council before we move to testimony? We have 14 people that have signed up.
Do you want me to comment on Commissioner Saltzman's amendment, or you want to do that later?
No, why don't you do that now if you're ready?
Yes. First of all, on behalf of Meredith, he'd like to thank you. He was here earlier. We actually changed his whole schedule to get him here at 2, and he apologizes for not being here right now. With regard to Commissioner Saltzman's amendment, we would accept that amendment with the following proviso. And that is, there is, to our knowledge, there are no standards today for LEED certification for renovating an existing stadium, and in particular, a soccer stadium. And so we are committed. We have revenue. We have revenues in the project for sustainability features. We are committed to doing our best to achieve that LEED certification. We will accept the amendment. But if it turns out that it is impossible to achieve a LEED silver certification, simply because there are no standards or no way to get there, we'd like to at least have the ability to come back and discuss that with the council during the development agreement stage.
Yes, I certainly accept that. I think much of what a LEED standard, particularly for existing buildings, speaks to are things that would apply as much to a stadium as they would to an office building. So I think there's a way to get there. But yeah, if you can show the case that the U.S. Green Building Council says, hey, we simply don't have a standard that matches something like this, I'm open to that.
Okay,
but
thank you.
Otherwise, the commitment needs to be, we're going to get LEED silver, and it's going to be certified by the U.S. Green Building Council.
Understood.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for your presentation. Let's go ahead and there's an amendment on the table, and unless there's objection from council, I'm prepared to have us vote on that amendment. This is Commissioner Saltzman's amendment.
Do we have a testimony and everything first?
We have to vote on the amendment first.
Okay.
So that's on the floor.
And we can take it off later after testimony and do other amendments if we want. So unless there is objection, Carla, can you please call the roll on Commissioner Saltzman's amendment to Section 9 on sustainability?
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard? Adams?
Aye. Amendment is approved. We're now open to testimony on the amended term sheet and the other Council calendar items 1032 and 1033.
First three people, please come on up, are Shirley Burke, Eliana Matura, and Sheila Allen.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. And our procedure for all testimony is very easy. You only have to give us your first and last name. We don't want your address. And you'll have 3 minutes, and that countdown clock on that big hunk of wood will help you keep track of your time.
Hi, Mayor and City Commissioners. My name is Shirley Burke. I am a banquet worker at the Hilton Hotel for 23 years, and I'm also a proud member of Unite Here for 37 years. As you can see behind me, there are more members of our union that came today because this is a passionate issue for us workers and as union members and for non-union members in the city of Portland. Our union contract brings many benefits. We are enabled for a living wage, work toward affordable health care, secure pensions, safe working conditions, and most importantly, respect and dignity. Another great benefit for the stadium is the union members are unlikely to leave. If you look at the records of the other union houses, like the Hilton Hotel, most employees have been there 15 years plus. Through a labor peace ordinance, the PGA workers too will be allowed to choose these benefits and have protected voice at the workplace. As we ask you think about this labor peace ordinance and do a meaningful vote in October, which Leia will tell you about.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Hi, welcome to City Council.
Hi, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Shalia Allen, and I work with Unite Here Local 9. We represent almost 1,000 members in the Portland area. And in the interest of creating quality jobs and protecting the city from labor disputes in the stadium project, we're proposing that you consider labor peace language in the financial agreement in which the city clerk will be passing out. In brief, this works by creating an environment where the developer or the operator can obtain a no-strike guarantee from the union in return for a neutral, expedited, and democratic process for workers to choose for or against unionization. The city wanting to create quality jobs and living wage jobs with its investment, as well as desiring to protect the investment of public funds, simply starts the process by requiring a no-strike guarantee from the developer. The city isn't involved in the interaction between the developer and the union thereafter. Labor peace agreements, we have about a dozen of them on the West Coast, including San Francisco, Seattle, San Diego. And we've found that these are a way to ensure quality jobs and that the future jobs of Portland will be good living wage jobs. And we look forward to discussing it in the future.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mm-hmm. Hi, welcome.
Hi, I'm Eliana from Portland Jobs with Justice. As you know, we're a coalition of 85 community, faith, and labor organizations in the struggle for workers' rights. And I'm here today to urge the city to do the right thing by workers in the negotiations between the city and Paulson. Actually, my first public speaking role in this, what was then my new position but is now old, 3 years ago was to ask the city to implement the fair wage at PGE Park, and they did for the third time implement the fair wage, and it made a huge difference, you know, that day forward for those workers. At the time, it was understood by all council members that it was the right thing to do, but that in the future, it would be really important that the employer pay that fair wage. So it was good to see the language in the resolution, but it is, I think, still disheartening to know that the city is continuing to subsidize it, even if it's at a lower rate. I think I'm still a little unclear. It sounded to me like that money was going towards construction, not necessarily the fair wage, but I'm unclear. The other thing that we were a little dismayed was that there wasn't the language that we thought we were hearing about union neutrality, and we know that this labor peace agreement has sort of been drafted. I think you guys got a copy of it. And we wanted to make sure that labor peace agreement or union neutrality covered all workers. I know that Will Lang from SEIU 49 was going to be here to testify, but he had to leave, and he wanted me to just highlight the success that they've had at the Rose Garden with janitors and the service masters of Swan Island and under union neutrality and how it's been able to create good jobs in a really positive way. And so we were disappointed not to see that. And the other thing is about subcontracted work, because if there isn't language in it about subcontracted workers, it's really easy to just sort of push that work, whatever the conditions or wages, and gets negotiated. So I guess we would like to see those two things added. We feel that the city should be fighting for and providing good jobs for Portlanders. A fair wage is definitely a good step. It's the first step to take. But we do believe that union neutrality is what's going to put Portlanders on the path to creating good jobs and growing the middle class.
So thank you.
Thank you.
And your basic understanding was correct in terms of a joint responsibility for paying the wage.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Fish.
I just have a question about the labor peace agreement, and I haven't seen it before today, so I'm just trying to make sure I understand
sure.
what it is you're proposing. The agreement appears to be between Shortstop LLC, or I suppose Peregrine, or whatever the entity is, and Unite Here Local 9. And it binds the employer to do a number of things with the union. I'm just curious, on what basis would Unite Here Local 9 be the designated union for an agreement like this? Is this pursuant to something where the employees have asked Unite Here to represent them in this matter at this stage, or is there some other? How does Unite Here get designated in this agreement?
We're not designated as of now, and that language was just recently drafted, so that may be a mistypo on there.
I think what it means is that mm-hmm. the workers will have a right to have the same wage as union workers, and if not, they can choose the union to come in and represent them at that time.
But Unite Here Local 9 won't necessarily be the designated labor representative for this.
Okay, because there's other provisions in here that provide for referrals for job vacancies and other things, and it refers mm-hmm. to Unite. And I'm just, without getting technical, we as a city council, regardless of our views on this issue and this mm-hmm. agreement, don't have the legal right to designate any union absent some ruling by some determination by employees.
Right.
Okay. I just wanted to get a clarification.
Thank you all very much. Really appreciate your time here. Carla, the next three.
Next three are Gil Fry and the Two Sisters Trio.
So would the Two Sisters Trio please get ready nearby. So Mr. Fry is very graciously arranged for some entertainment. Mr. Fry.
My name is Gil Fry, and I'm able to stutter for 2 minutes, and then you could say my time's up.
Okay.
But there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things to talk about. For example, I grew up here and went to Kennedy School, Jefferson High School in Portland U, and in the early days, facilities were the Pilot Hall, and they were the Armory, and the old PI building, and the city needed a facility. And they voted on it about 5 times, and it took 10 years in order to get it approved. And I've been fighting to save this Coliseum now for about 15 years. And way back in the 40s, I recognized the need. And in the 50s, I recognized the attempt to see it happen. Now we have it, and I'll go ahead and quit. So I figured what I have to say is really not probably going to do any good. And therefore, I figured someone ought to come and sing, because there are lots of groups. There are lots of groups that could fill this Coliseum, such as the Rockettes and such as Billy Graham, or Franklin Graham, And number one, Luis Palau, number one evangelist in the world. And so therefore, I'm going to share with you some number ones. Number one is the Lloyd Center. Number one, time's up.
Okay. No, you said you were going to let us hear some singing.
I have a question.
Number one is the Coliseum and the Rose Garden together under Global Spectrum were number one in the world. And most people don't know that.